You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 164 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman number 51, Batman number 77, Jimmy Olsen number 2, Black Mask, You're the Villain number 1, and Kingdom Come. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, coming up first for DC news. Updated August 29th, 2019, DC has canceled all orders for Shazam number 9 through 11, but informed retailers that the issues will be resolicited. The Geoff Johns Dale Eaglesham series has had scheduling issues since its December 2018's launch, with every issue except for number 3 and 4 being pushed back on DC's schedule. The most recent issue, Shazam number 6, came out on June 6th, with 7 originally solicited to follow on July 3rd, with DC currently estimating a September 25 release. Shazam number 8 is listed with an October 9th release.
One of the things that I know that I've certainly talked about on the podcast before is DC historically can never get their crap together when it comes to Shazam. And this is just yet another example of that. I mean, I'm not saying that had they gotten it right, it would have suddenly been the top-selling comic for the company. But it's riding off of a really popular movie that came out earlier this year, and you follow that up with this. I mean, what the hell? You seriously can't get your crap together for enough to get another comic out since June?
So Shazam's been having problems, and so has Doomsday Clock. I'm beginning to wonder if the issue is Geoff Johns.
I think we both thought initially for Doomsday Clock, at least, it was the artist. I love Gary Frank, but I thought maybe it's just taking longer to draw because something came up, and that's fine. He's such a good artist, I'd rather him take his time and get it done. With this, though, has it been the same artist for every issue for Shazam?
I'm not sure.
And to be completely honest with you, even if it has been, it's been, like, okay artwork. So not something that I would personally find irreplaceable. It's got to be Johns. And if it's not Johns, the only thing I can think of is that this clearly is very heavily tied into whatever they're doing with the movie. As we saw with the movie, followed Johns' initial Shazam story pretty closely. And then the teaser for that clearly was referencing what this story is addressing right now, which is the empty chair. And so the only thing I can think of maybe is that they have one plan for this story, but the sequel to Shazam is going in a different direction, and so now they're trying to shift the story to match that. It's the only thing I can think of that isn't just John's, for whatever reason, not getting the story submitted.
I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on, but the key factor in both series is John's, and I'm just wondering what's going on.
It kind of blows my mind because he took a step back from all of his other stuff so that he could write more. I'm not saying that I could be, you know, a top-level writer, but, like, relatively speaking, compared to what artists have to do, it's not nearly as hard to churn out a script in a certain amount of time, you know? Like, I'm not saying that it's easy to write a script, but, like, it like artists have a lot more of a time crunch that they have to deal with, in my opinion, than a writer does. There's a reason why, like, Tom King can churn out three different series at once, because all he has to do is write the script. He doesn't have to carefully detail everything on a page.
And we've seen, over the years, I've seen multiple writers doing multiple things at the same time. So that's probably not the issue. There's probably something else going on with Johns that we're just not aware of.
I feel like DC needs more communication on what's going on. I understand that it may be something that is private to Johns, but like, you've got to give people something, because like, you've just got all of these people just got dangling, waiting for the remainder of these stories. I know a lot of people basically just quit on Doomsday Clock, and I don't blame them. It's been almost 2 years at this point.
Yeah, and it's a shame too, because the story's really good.
It is. It's a really good comic, and it's one of those things, you know, years down the road, it's not going to be, you know, I think it'll have a little bit of a comeback, because it'll just be done as a book and people can find it as a book. And I think it will have a little bit of a boost in popularity. But in the meantime, the sales for the last few issues of Doomsday Clock, I think, are going to be way lower than they should have been, because everybody's basically just like shrugged and moved on.
Yeah, and the Shazam series has been pretty good so far, too.
Yeah, I agree. It's so frustrating to me, because even if it's not the best comic that DC is putting out, they're still doing a Shazam comic, and this is exactly how you get a book canceled, is by doing this stuff.
Yep. All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of news for this week. Nathan Fillion has been cast for an undisclosed role for Warner Brothers' The Suicide Squad. So happy to hear about this, because I love Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. There was also, and again, this is just a rumor, so we don't know if it will actually happen or not, but Taika Waititi, the director of Thor Ragnarok, is rumored to also potentially be getting a role in the movie too. And that's just like, I really like, if even if that's not true, even with just Nathan Fillion, like, you can kind of see the kind of cast that James Gunn is going for with this, and I'm pretty into it.
Yeah, I didn't put that in DC News because it was just a rumor, but thanks for announcing it for us.
I don't want to emphasize it is a rumor, so we don't know if it'll be true or not, but it would be really cool if they got him too. I mean, just, he's a really funny dude. Nathan Fillion obviously is a really funny dude. I like the direction of what it looks like James Gunn is doing with this movie.
I do too, and it makes me even more excited about it. All right, and for our next bit of DC News, CW's Flash, Arrow, and Supergirl are getting an audiobook series. Berlanti Productions is guiding the storylines of audio dramas, which are described as existing outside of the main Arrowverse canon. Additionally, the plot of the 8-episode Flash audio series has been revealed. And in that story, Lex Luthor will change the past to make Flash, Green Arrow, and Supergirl villains. No specific release dates for the audio series have been announced yet. But it sounds kind of cool. And with them doing it as audiobooks instead of just regular novels, I think it'll get more people to listen to it. Because I've noticed it seems like more people listen to audiobooks and podcasts lately. At least it seems like that to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's the convenience of it, right? Like, you can be listening to an audiobook while you're doing something else, whereas if you're reading, it's very hard to be doing anything else.
Right. I mean,
you're doing that.
I've listened to audiobooks while I've been working, driving, you know. It's just a lot more convenient.
Now, I'd be curious, are they planning on getting any of the people from the shows to be doing any of the voices?
Did not see anything about that. I'm hoping they do, but if they don't, I wouldn't be surprised. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised either, but I do. It would be a little odd. That's the only thing I can see, is it being a little odd to people who are, you know, obviously the selling point is this is fans of the CW shows, and so you pick it up and then Flash sounds totally different from Grant Gustin. I'm assuming that they'd probably go for somebody who can do a pretty good Grant Gustin impression, is what I'm guessing they would do.
I'm hoping they get the actual actors, but you never know, so.
Yeah.
We can only hope.
That is pretty cool, though. I'm interested to see how they do. That's always the thing when they announce projects like this. I'm like, I think that's cool, but how many other people think that's going to be cool?
All right. tonight. And in other DC news, we got a new Joker trailer. It's supposed to be the final trailer released before its October 4th release. So I checked it out. I wasn't really excited about a Joker movie, but this trailer kind of intrigued me a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. This one was really the one that gave us the most information about the movie. We had kind of been able, the one before, if at least I'm remembering it right, we kind of got some idea of where the movie was going, but this one was really the most like info heavy trailer. I'm really intrigued. And then in addition to that, we've also started to have some of the first reviews trickle out, and it's been getting really good reviews.
I saw an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Obviously it's a limited number of reviews so far, so you know, do take that with a grain of salt, but man, I am very intrigued to see this movie now.
I am too. And I would be very happy if there was some sort of Batman cameo or Bruce Wayne cameo in it. But I'm not holding my breath.
I think Bruce will probably be in it, but I would be surprised. It doesn't seem like the kind of movie that's going to have Batman pop up.
Yeah, probably not. But my ultimate Joker movie, if they were doing some sort of origin of him, would be to end it with some confrontation with Batman. That would be freaking awesome. But I know that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But it would be so cool. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, we got the Titans Season 2 official trailer. And we're only 1 week away. I'm excited about the return of Titans.
I keep forgetting how soon it is. Like, in my head, it's starting later. Like, I'm so used to, with all the CW shows, that October is like the month for superhero stuff. And so I'm always like, oh yeah, that's right, we're getting something soon. I'm excited. I'm excited for this new season. Obviously, with the trailer that we got and some of the sneak peeks that we've been getting leading up to this, we're seeing some more comic accurate portrayals of like Raven and some of the other characters. And so, I mean, Trigon remains my biggest question. And so I'm very curious to, I'm super curious to see where the season goes.
Well, I can tell you right now, season 2, episode 1 is called Trigon.
But is that going to be like Flash's Flashpoint episode? That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see when we review it next week. Yep. All right. Well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
My name is Quoth. I tread paths by moonlight that others fear to speak of during the day. I've talked to gods, loved women, and written songs that make the minstrels weep. You may have heard of me. Join Mandy and her friends as they explore Patrick Rothfuss's best-selling fantasy series, The Kingkiller Chronicle. You can find us at casterquest.com or on the ESO network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you.
For you.
All right, let's talk Aquaman number 51. So this issue opens up with Aquaman driving Jackson Hyde, Aqualad, back to Amnesty Bay from jail. And one of the things I thought was weird, Cletus, was it doesn't really tell us why Jackson went to jail.
It doesn't even seem to imply that he was arrested, per se. For the way I got the context of the comic, it was that he was, like, detained for being suspicious. And there definitely seemed to be a race element to that, which obviously I could see the comic going with. But it didn't... My interpretation was that he was not actually charged with the crime.
Yeah, and it didn't say anything about it. It just kind of moved on. One of the things I thought was interesting, and we may have known this and I forgot, he's the son of Black Manta.
I mean, if you're a fan of Young Justice, you would know that. But yes, yeah, I would say that's not something that's focused on in the comics a whole lot, but the only reason I know is because of the show.
Okay. And I haven't watched that much of Young Justice. That's something I need to do. But one of the things we find out about Jackson is he really wants to be Aquaman's sidekick, partner, something. And I thought this issue did a hilarious job of showing that. One of the things we see when Aquaman gets back is Arthur and Jackson help the old gods move into their new homes on their new island. And I kind of liked how Aquaman had the dolphins help with the moving of the items. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I did. I thought that was funny, too.
But, of course, we get towards the end of the issue, and a monster attacks the island. So I'm curious if it's just a random monster attacking or if there's somebody behind it. Curious about that.
There definitely seems to be some sort of Lovecraftian theme to the story that they're going with for this one, and it seems entirely unconnected to the Black Manta story. It was so weird because just like the Mr. Freeze comic that we read with Detective Comics, where Mr. Freeze is on the cover and then the story has absolutely nothing to do with him and he pops up at the end with Luther, we get the same thing here. So clearly the main story, the last two issues at least, have been setting up this Lovecraft story, which I am interested in, don't get me wrong. I think it's very interesting. And yet it's also setting up something with Luther and Black Manta. And again, Black Manta is the one on the cover. It's so odd to me. Like, this is... these two comics have kind of explained to me why DC had that issue where they had to swap the covers of a couple of their comics, because these covers have nothing to do with anything.
Yeah. I saw those covers on sale at Indiana Comic Con this weekend for $15 a piece. Interesting. They didn't get destroyed.
Huh. Huh. Who could have predicted that?
Yeah, no kidding.
So weird.
But, yeah, I saw them on sale at Indiana Comic Con, so no surprise there.
I sincerely hope nobody paid $15 for one of those, because it's just, in both cases, those are just normal comics. I'm just, like, I get it in theory from a rarity standpoint, but, like, come on. I don't think that those comics are ever going to be worth $15.
So, I'd be curious to know if they sold any of them, but...
I hope not. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So, like you said, at the end of the issue, Lex Luthor offers Black Manta two gifts in exchange for a service. A weapon capable of destroying Aquaman and his father back. So, Lex reveals the Mecha Manta to him, which is an artificial intelligence programmed using DNA and farm data to emulate Black Manta's father. Weird.
Yeah, that was my reaction. I was like, that's weird.
No, that's okay. Exactly what I thought too. So, we have that.
I find it very odd that what DC's doing with this. They're clearly trying to set up the big overall DC story with these, but they clearly seem to be inconveniencing the writers of the individual series. Doesn't that seem that way to you?
Yeah, it does, because they have to take time out of their story to do these villain stories at the end of their issues. And then, of course, like you said, they're putting them on the cover like it's part of this big issue, and then it's just a couple pages at the end.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, in both cases, both Detective Comics and this one, the cover is explicitly advertising one villain that is not what the story is about. And it's just, I mean, obviously, I mean, you should never expect a cover to be wholly accurate, but I mean, it's a little ridiculous, I think.
Yep. All right, and before we move on to another issue, I want to talk about Mira, because we get a couple scenes in Atlantis where they're preparing for the wedding, and we have Mira and Volko. Well, Mira's trying to decide they're trying to figure out what flower she wants, and she picks some flowers that are way off. They're impossible to get to, and to me it seems like she's trying to delay the wedding.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I feel like that's explicitly what she's trying to do.
I'm guessing she's trying to delay it because she's waiting for Aquaman to come back to Atlantis, is my guess.
Maybe subconsciously, because she, like Aquaman, both of them are sort of stubbornly waiting for the other one to do something.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how long this is going to go on for.
I find it kind of silly, to be honest, because do you expect her to actually get married to Volko?
No.
Yeah, I don't either.
No, I don't think she is. So, I'm wondering where it's going to go. The comic has been good so far, so, you know, I'm invested with whatever they're going, just because they've been doing such a great job with this run of their series.
Oh yeah, I completely agree with you. This has been a great Aquaman run.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman number 77. This issue opens up with Damian sneaking into Gotham City. Gotham Girl spots him and tries to stop him using her powers. And we see Damian use the Wand of Clarion to magically bind Gotham Girl with chains. I thought that was a pretty cool scene between the two.
Yeah, I agree. That was really cool. I enjoyed the confrontation between them. And then I thought it was a pretty Damian way of outsmarting.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And getting out of that, you know what I mean? Like, willing to do something unexpected. Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
And it doesn't surprise me at all that Damian would be first of the Bat family to go into Gotham.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's any other Bat character that I would have accepted doing that other than Damian. Maybe Jason. That's the only other one I could think of.
Right. But it made perfect sense for Damian.
Yeah.
Next, we see Damian takes on Detective Zazz and Detective Scarecrow of the GCPD, who are harassing some dude walking his dog. Apparently, his leash was too long and was in violation of the city ordinance. It was weird to see Detective Zazz, since he's basically a serial killer.
Yeah, kinda in this that one role. Was amusing, although I didn't feel like King leaned into it as hard as he did the Detective Joker and Riddler. Like, he had Riddler and Joker really actually act like detectives. And that was part of what made it so funny.
Yes.
This one was just Zazz wearing a, you know, police uniform.
Yeah, pretty much.
Still funny, but not, like, it didn't have quite that same, I don't know how to describe it. Like, it wasn't quite the same.
Right. After Damian's confrontation with them, basically took him out pretty easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's Zazz, so.
Yeah. So after that, we see Damian confront Thomas Wayne on a rooftop. And that was an interesting interaction between the two, because it's basically the first time they met, grandfather and grandson. The two end up fighting, of course, and Thomas Wayne ends up being beaten Damian and brings him back to Wayne Manor. And because Damian violated the no Bat family rule, Thomas orders Bane to kill Alfred right in front of Damian. That was kind of brutal to watch.
Yeah, especially with Alfred like begging for them not to do it in front of Damian.
Yeah.
Not even like begging not to die, just like not to do it in front of the kid. Like, oh, that was tough.
That was tough. So we had that happen, and no thanks to the internet for spoilers on that.
Yeah, I gotta say, we've talked about this before, that it's sort of inevitable with so-called comics journalism. There's just not a lot to write about. And so when something big does happen, in my opinion, there are too many comics journalism sites. And that's somebody who is a huge fan of comics as a medium and wants people to be writing about them. But, like, I don't need five places writing about Batman 77 already selling. Like, if you are reading that book, it was obvious immediately who died. You know what I mean? Like, to me at least. And I was so frustrated because had I not even seen... Because, like, I will admit, they did a pretty good job of not giving the name away. in the headlines, but if you're reading the book, you know. The whole threat of staying out of Gotham was, we'll kill Alfred if you come in. And so when they said, hey, a big Batman character dies, obviously it's Alfred. And so I was super frustrated because I go into that book, and even if I hadn't pieced together that it was Alfred, I still go into that book completely differently. If I just picked up that book without seeing any of these headlines, I honestly would not have expected anybody to die in that book. I would have been blindsided by that. I mean, obviously, by the time the story gets to that point, it would have been like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. But I've been like, oh, crap, this is really happening. But instead, I know that somebody's dying. And when Damian starts to lose to Thomas, it's like, well, okay, thanks, Internet.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious at that point. I mean, I wasn't expecting anybody to die in the next issue either until I saw the headlines. And I'm like, oh, crap, what's going on now? And, you know, it's pretty obvious when you first start reading it that we know what's going to happen.
I know it's their job to write about stuff that's big news, but, like, can we at least not write about it on Tuesday? At least wait until Wednesday so that some people could have read the book first.
That yeah.
So frustrating to me. And it's so frustrating because I'm not entirely sure that DC didn't intentionally leak it. I know both Marvel and DC have both done that in the past, where they have intentionally leaked a big detail ahead of time to help generate buzz for the comic. And it's just like, I get it. I get what you're trying to do from a business standpoint, because you're trying to make people go out and buy the book that wouldn't normally buy it, but you're also kind of giving the middle finger to people that were already going to buy your book.
Yep, can't argue with that. All right, in the other part of this issue, we see Catwoman watching over Bruce as he recovers. And when he wakes up, he admits to Selina that he lost. And that moment was very depressing, I thought.
Yeah.
We see Bruce decides he has to go back into Gotham before any of the Bat family does. I guess it comes to a realization to him that eventually the Bat family is going to go in there. He knows them well enough, so he knows they're going to, and he realizes if he goes back, he's going to die, because he's not ready to take on Thomas Wayne or Bane. But he's accepted the fact that he's prepared to die in the city where his parents died. Kind of depressing, I thought.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I kind of liked Catwoman sort of like slapping him out of it, so to speak. Like, no, this is not what was going to happen.
I know. And she wants to offer a different way of doing this. And I'm curious to see what Catwoman's way is. If she gets Bruce to do something different than just doing it his way, it'll be very interesting, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious to see what Catwoman's method is, too. I'm really happy that we've got the two of them back together.
Yes. We haven't really seen them reconcile yet their differences, but they're working together.
I almost wonder if we will see that. Wouldn't it be pretty typical of both of them to just sort of ignore it?
Yeah, you're right. It would.
Right?
Like, yeah.
I have to say, like, I agree. Normally, I would expect to have had some sort of conversation between two characters, but in the fact that it's Catwoman and Batman, I'm like, it kind of makes sense that they haven't said anything.
That's true. That's very true. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Jimmy Olsen number 2. I gotta tell you, Cletus, I was surprised when the issue opened up with Joachim Olsen. I thought the old dude was taking a dirt nap last issue when Luthia smacked him off that cliff with a shovel. But I guess, if you think about it, there wouldn't be any future Olsons if that was the case.
was that the same Olson?
I'm guessing it was the same Olson. He had the same exact name, because I went back and looked at the first issue to make sure.
Oh, okay.
Now,
that's what I wasn't sure about.
The only thing I was wondering is the story where they're seeing in issue 2 taking place before the one in issue 1 or after? That was what I was a little unsure about, but it felt like it might have been after, because Luthius looked surprised to see him when he walked in the bar.
He also had that wound on his head also.
Right, and he looked like crap.
Yeah.
He looked like... I think I wrote in my notes that it looked like he went a few rounds with a bobcat. But anyways, he walks on in and slaps that piece of gold down on the counter, claims he's rich. And they just kind of end the story there. And I'm like, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen next between him and Luthius. So, love that they brought that back. Because I love the first one when they freaking knocked him off the cliff. And then I thought they were done with it. So I was surprised to see it back in this one. Now, in the second story, we get to meet Julian Olsen, Jimmy's big brother. And apparently there's some family issues going on with those two. Because he seems to be blaming Jimmy for everything.
Yeah, they clearly have some stuff to work through.
Yes. Another story that was in this issue that I really loved was the Jimmy and Superman story. Thought it was hilarious to see Superman joking around on like his YouTube channel and kind of having fun and not being so serious like he normally is to the public. You know, kind of with his guard down. It was great to see that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree.
And of course, the fourth story in this was the Gotham story. And we didn't get very much more of the Gotham story. We basically see Jimmy calls for Lois' help. And of course, in the last scene, Clark notices that Lois is leaving in a hurry. And she's wondering where the heck she's going to go. I'm guessing it's going to be a sure bet next issue that Jimmy and Lois are going to get into some sort of sticky situation in Gotham. And Superman's going to have to come save them. And since they're in Gotham, Batman's going to pop up at some point. That's my guess for next issue.
Pretty reasonable guess, I would say.
Yeah. I was expecting more out of the Gotham issue, but we didn't get very much this week. So I guess we're going to get more next issue. All right. Well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Black Mask, You're the Villain Number One. One thing I have to say about this issue... In my whole career as a comic book reader, I've never seen the origin of Black Mask before, at least that I can remember. The story felt kind of new to me. I don't even remember ever seeing Black Mask's name before. So it was interesting to see that his name was Roman and that his origin was tied to Bruce's childhood. Found that interesting. We see Roman wasn't treated very kindly by his parents, and we see that Roman is very jealous of Bruce Wayne. Thought he had it all. Now, when we jump to the present, we see that Black Mask has taken hostages. He's surrounded by the police and has no escape. Lex Luthor's Legion of Doom robot thing shows up, and Lex's hologram offers Black Mask a deal. He's going to help Black Mask escape, but he wants Black Mask infiltrate a rival company of Luthor's. It's interesting because Luthor is able to get Black Mask to change his MO and kind of wear different people's faces instead of Black Mask. Kind of reminded me of Game of Thrones when Arya was wearing different people's faces. That's what it reminded me of. And Lex is able to basically change his mode of operation, and I found it pretty interesting.
I found the origin interesting because, like you, I don't think I knew Black Mask's origin before. I found the present part of the story pretty boring, though, to be honest with you.
What was weird?
I found his power really interesting. The thing, what he gets from Lex, the ability to change his face all the time.
Right.
And still have the mask underneath. That was cool. But then what they did with the story was sort of, like, I don't know. It was odd. It was odd the way they chose to frame it through Batwoman and Renee Montoya instead of Black Mask. But then go back to Black Mask perspective occasionally. It was weird how we were jumping perspectives. I think that was sort of what was throwing me off.
Yes. That not only was that weird, that was my you're getting to my point. Going back to the beginning of the story with the origin with Bruce Wayne, it was weird that they brought Batwoman and Renee Montoya in it instead of Batman or Bruce or something. It was kind of weird, I thought.
The only thing I could think of was that if you bring Batman in, it would be harder to justify Batman not resolving the situation.
Yeah.
Whereas it would be more easy to explain Renee Montoya and Batwoman screwing it up a little bit.
That is true.
Even though they do solve the initial crime, so to speak. They do get him out of the one business, but then he's right back at it at the end of the comic.
Oh yeah.
I find the status quo for him very interesting. So in that regard, the comic was a success, but in terms of an actual comic, I would hesitate to recommend it to people because it's pretty forgettable, to be honest.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't as good as the Sinestro one.
No, Sinestro was such a great self-contained story. It had everything you needed. In my opinion, really no prior knowledge you needed for that book, to be completely honest. Obviously you can get some of the nuances a little bit more if you know more about Sinestro, but you don't need it. And in this, you don't necessarily need any other prior knowledge for this one either, but it doesn't really tell a complete story the way Sinestro did.
No, it doesn't. And it doesn't seem to gel as well together either.
No, it's just sort of almost like a 22-page status quo update that just sort of like, and now we're going to end the comic.
Yeah.
It was odd. It just didn't really, and I think part of why it struggled telling a coherent story was because of the perspective shifts. Like, it starts from Black Mask's perspective, and it ends with his perspective, but we get in the middle, all of a sudden the comic is entirely about Renee Montoya and Batwoman, and that just does not make sense.
No. And apparently they're dating again.
Like I said, 22-page status quo update is basically what this comic was.
Yeah, because last time I knew Batwoman was dating somebody else. So, of course, the Batwoman comic ended a while back, didn't it? Yeah, it did. So, yeah, you're right. It's basically a status update. All right, well, that wraps up our comic book talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk Kingdom Come.
We are the Cigar Nerds, bringing nerdy sophistication and geeky indulgence on all topics, including movies, video games, science, and pop culture news, all from the Nerd Cave Cigar Lounge. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever fine podcasts are found, including ESONetwork.com and CigarNerdPodcast.com. So fire up a cigar. It's time to get nerdy.
And we're back. Let's talk Kingdom Come. And joining us tonight is Angela Pritchett. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me.
No problem. It was seems like it was only a week ago.
It was only a week ago.
And I'm excited about talking about Kingdom Come. One of the reasons why I put this on the schedule was it popped up in Young Justice a few weeks ago. We were reviewing the most recent issue of Young Justice, and they were traveling through the multiverse and came across the Kingdom Come universe. So I wanted to kind of go over the story because I had never read Kingdom Come before, believe it or not. So, and I thought it'd be great to review on the podcast. So the story opens up. The Spectre is aware that a great evil is about to be visited on the world. He wasn't given any specifics, and despite his great power, he's not clairvoyant, but he knew a great clash between the metahumans was coming. And as God's terrible swift sword, the Spectre uses Norman McKay to judge the exact nature of that evil and how it will be punished. I really liked how the story used Norman McKay, his point of view on what was going on in the world at that time. We find out that Norman McKay is an elderly minister in which the Spectre has taken an interest in because of the power he received from the Sandman. And I was going to ask you guys, is this the Sandman, Vertigo Sandman they're talking about?
No, it's the Golden Age Sandman.
The Golden Age Sandman, okay. Which I don't know much about either.
If you've ever read any JSA comics, there's a high chance that he popped up in one of those.
Okay. I'm not that familiar with the JSA. I have read them when they've crossed over into other stuff, but I've never read just JSA stuff. In this story, the reader gets to go on a journey with the Spectre and Norman as they visit the current state of the world, where metahumans seem to run amok without any checks and balances from humans. The old superheroes seem to have retired or faded away, while their descendants have taken their roles. The first of the old superheroes we get to visit that the Spectre and Norman visit is Superman, and they witness an encounter where Wonder Woman has come to persuade Clark to come help with the problem of the metahumans, and we find out that Superman has put himself in seclusion / retirement after another hero named Magog blatantly killed the Joker instead of taking him to prison. Magog is basically put on trial for this. He's clear of any wrongdoings, and Superman kind of lost faith in people that he was sworn to protect, and of course we also find out Lois had died at the hands of the Joker too, so you know, all this stuff was kind of weighing on his heart, and he goes away for about 10 years. I really enjoyed this story. I had never read it before, but I had seen artwork from Kingdom Come for years, you know, because I love Alex Ross's art. His art on this story was awesome.
Yeah, no, this is actually, this comic specifically is one that is, for me personally, a standby for when somebody asks me, like, is there a, like, you're into comics, like, what's a comic I should read? Kingdom Come is almost always one that I like, here, read this, because the artwork is so, like, it just, like, it captures your attention, even if, and so it's, well, I think there are other great comics as well, that are even maybe better for new readers, because this one, I think you do benefit from knowing a lot of the characters, but the artwork is just so good, and it's so captivating that it really hooks people in that aren't comic readers, because they're like, oh, I've never seen, like, they have an idea of what comic art looks like, and then they see that, and it kind of changes their perspective a little bit.
I always wonder how long it takes Alex Ross to paint when he does a comic book. You know, he's done a lot of covers over the years, but when he actually paints a comic book, I always wonder how long it takes him, because his pictures are always so detailed. And I know he uses models, because I used to read articles about him doing his painting. He always uses real live models for his paintings, and they're always so realistic looking. Love his artwork.
Yeah, I mean, if you combine, he really has only done a handful of series, and then almost everything else he's done has just been cover work. He did a series called Marvels that is very similar to Kingdom Come in that it takes the perspective of the common man, kind of witnessing these major Marvel events throughout, like, the history of Marvel. And then he also has Justice, which is another DC one. And then I think he's done a couple other things, some one-shots. Like, I know he did a Shazam one-shot. But really, like, he did these books somewhat close together, really made a huge name for himself, and then it hasn't, like, he's basically just coasted on covers since then.
Do you guys know if this was branded as an Elseworlds?
I think this isn't just an Elseworlds, like, mini-series type thing. They weren't going to go any more further than the 4 issues type story. It was just like a altogether one-shot story. The similar, the way, like, where you mentioned Marvels, because those were the two that I always thought about, like, when I worked in a comic shop. They were both very similar. It was, you know, Kingdom Come and Marvels were, like, Marvel and DC's distinctive Alex Ross series that were very similar too.
Yeah, I don't know specifically if it was branded as Elseworlds or not either, but I do know eventually, as DC and Marvel are wont to do, they did start to incorporate it into their main continuity. There was a JSA story arc called Thy Kingdom Come that Geoff Johns did that sort of incorporate it. It's hard to describe, but it's almost like the events of King, like, it's basically like trying to prevent the events of Kingdom Come from coming to pass, and sort of seeing that happen in the, in, I think, in the main DC universe, or I believe the story is tracing it in the main DC universe, but I don't remember the story well enough. But if anybody's curious to see more with this, Thy Kingdom Come is sort of a pseudo sequel-ish to this. It does have Magog. It did incorporate Magog briefly into canon, but of course, with the New 52, all of that went away.
What I found interesting about this was we see a Superman who's lost hope. He has to get that hope back to basically bring back the Justice League. It's really interesting where we find everybody at. Of course, we saw Superman has secluded himself. Wonder Woman, we find out the Amazonians have basically told her, you failed your mission. They stripped her of her title of being a princess and her heritages, and basically she was kind of like exiled from paradise. They didn't actually say exiled. She said she was unwelcome there. So that was an interesting position for Wonder Woman. The Flash. I thought that was interesting that the Flash was still being the Flash, but not he wasn't being public about it. He was more like a ghost that just would go around the city fixing things without actually revealing to the public it was him. You know what I mean? Everybody knew it was the Flash, but it was like he was a ghost. So I thought that was interesting. We saw Hawkman. Some people saw him as a savior. Some people saw him as an environmental terrorist. He was basically protecting nature in the North Pacific United States. Thought that was interesting. We saw Green Lantern basically build a fortress in orbit around Earth where he's basically just sitting there waiting for extraterrestrials in case they show up, then you know he would act. Then of course Batman still being Batman, even though he's older and we see him with prosthetics, you know, things that look like, you know, things that help him function. And he's basically using bat robots and drones to aid in his fight for justice. So we see that he's kept doing his thing in Gotham. I found that interesting.
And I was fascinated every time I read this by how well they show the physical toll that being Batman took on Bruce without ever explicitly saying it. Like, he's wearing that exoskeleton because he clearly basically can't, like, his body can't hold up without it. But the way they kind of do that wordlessly is such a neat touch.
But it also talks about with Batman the consequences of other people finding out that Bruce Wayne was Batman, because like Superman shows up and he's like, "Where's Wayne Manor?" And Batman's like, "Well, when they found out it was me, Bane and Two-Face came, and that was it."
It's funny, they always talk about with Batman. They always talk about how Bruce Wayne is the mask and he's really Batman. And this kind of showed that, because once people find out Bruce Wayne was Batman, he basically just discarded the Bruce Wayne part of his life and just became Batman, staying down in the cave being Batman 24/7. They didn't really explain where Alfred was or anything, but you could probably guess he'd passed on since then, since Bruce was so much older by then. And of course Dick Grayson went off on his own mission. Actually, I think it looked like he was retired or something, and then when the Justice League came back together, he came back, became active again. Is that what I remember?
I don't remember if we really see anything about him one way or the other until we see him pop back up as Robin.
Okay, that could be.
I could be remembering. I know I did just read this again, but I don't remember them really mentioning much or anything about him. I think the first time we really, if I remember right, they don't even clarify that it's Dick until Bruce and Superman are talking.
I found it interesting that when Superman did go to talk to Bruce, you know, Superman had been gone for so long, he had no interest in taking up his mission. He just wanted to focus on Gotham. But then later on in the story, we see him team up with Lex. And it seemed like he just did that to find out what Lex was up to.
Yeah, I found it interesting because obviously, like, when he joins forces with Lex, I don't think most people read that and go, oh, yeah, they're definitely on the same team. Like, he's pretty clearly up to something. But what I think is interesting is that, at least I know for me, and I'm curious what you thought, when I first read it, I assumed it was he was mainly trying to figure out what Luther was up to. And once you get to a certain part in the story, you realize it's really he's more keeping tabs on what Billy is up to. Yeah, and I think that's kind of interesting because, like, Bruce is basically like, ah, like, I can take care of Lex, that's whatever. But Billy Batson, I need to keep tabs on.
Now, those worms that Lex Luthor was using on Billy, was that supposed to be like Mr. Mind or something? Or I don't know. That's
basically what... yeah. It was they because as Luthor mentions, they got them from Savannah, and I think the implication is pretty strong that they're genetically engineered from Mr. Mind.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. So having Lex Luthor having a brainwashed Shazam in his corner was quite interesting, and pretty much the only powerhouse who could take on Superman.
Yeah, one small scene that I really enjoy in this is when Bruce punches Billy, and Ollie's like, "Are you kidding me? We've been scared of Billy this whole time because everybody just like they only have ever known Billy as a kid." And the adult version, they've always known as the superhero, you know, like, alter ego. And so, like, of course he would have grown up in the meantime. So, like, it makes perfect sense that that's the human version of him. But nobody in that room has probably ever seen him in the past 10 years. And so they're all just like, oh, crap, that's Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. But I thought it was real interesting. When he went to punch, when he punched him, he was trying to keep him from saying Shazam, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, wouldn't you?
So, yeah, that was interesting. I also thought what was interesting in this story was the relationship between Superman and Wonder Woman. What I found interesting was the spark that was between them. They didn't, like how the story just didn't focus on it that much, even though it was important to the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think I would have liked had the romance between them been a focal point of the story. Because it's really not, you know, like ultimately the ending of the comic, it sort of makes sense. Like they're literally ushering in the next generation of superheroes that will hopefully kind of fix things that the two generations have kind of messed up. But it's also like their romance is not what the story is about. So I do like that it's sort of there, but not the centerpiece.
Right. It was pretty subtle, not just blatant. I like that, how they did that. I like how they handled it in the story. One thing I noticed they didn't do is they talked a lot about Magog a lot, but he wasn't really a focus as a villain of the story. He was just another hero that had an ideology that was separate from Superman's.
Right. And well, I think that one of the reasons he's not focused on a lot is because the story that we're reading isn't Magog's story. His story took place 10 years ago. And so we're seeing kind of the fallout from that. And then like kind of the capstone, in a sense, to Magog's story really is the disaster in Kansas. What we see after that when he deals with Superman is sort of like cleaning up the mess, but essentially like the story of Magog begins with the Joker murder and ends with the Kansas massacre. I don't know what you would call it, disaster. And so that's kind of interesting because he is obviously an antagonist, but he's not remembered by a lot of people as a villain in the story, but he's not really. Because like you said, he's not a villain. He's not even portrayed necessarily as a villain in this. He's a misguided hero.
Yeah, he just had a different ideology where he was okay with killing, and then he also feels remorse for some of what he did, or at least for what happened because of what he did.
Yeah.
And you get to see that in Kingdom Come instead of seeing him as a villain where people are like, oh, you kill, so you're a villain, whereas he was like, that's what we needed, and that's why they rallied behind me instead of you, Superman.
So one thing that I kind of want to talk about and I would love to get your guys' thoughts on this too. So Magog, and then just really the whole the second generation of superheroes in general within this story are clearly representative of 90s comics to an extent. Like, I know that Alex Ross has basically straight up said that he made Magog the, like, his version of a Rob Liefeld character. He's like, that, like, when I thought of a Rob Liefeld character, Magog is what I came up with, is paraphrasing what he said. And you can see that in the way they act. They're a lot more violent. They're willing to kill, you know. Destruction is not necessarily something they're avoiding. And the story kind of addresses that people, like, just like readers did, flock to those kind of books in the late 80s and 90s. People within this story flock to those kind of heroes. Like, that's kind of what people are wanting. And what's interesting to me is how I personally have interpreted Wade and Ross's response was like, yeah, but was that, like, were we right with that? Like, maybe that wasn't the right kind of hero.
I can tell you from my perspective, I've never been interested in the anti-hero. I do not like the Punishers. That's the first one that comes to my head, is the Punisher, because he blatantly kills all his villains. I've never really been interested in those type of heroes. I've always liked the Supermans and the Batmans because of their no-kill rule. And I guess it's because I grew up reading those. It kind of instilled it in me that heroes don't kill. So I've never liked the heroes that kill stories. Giving characters like Venom their own title. Venom's a villain. I don't think he should be having his own title, you know, cuz just like when the movie came out, I wasn't interested in seeing the Venom movie because he was an anti-hero, and that's just not my thing.
Angela, what about you? Do you have any?
Well, I mean, like, I totally get, like, and totally agree with what you were saying, where he's like, that's what people flocked to in the 90s, because that was the whole, like, the comics and the, like, certain comics, because they had the Comic Code Authority or whatever back then, too. So, like, certain comics were under that, and they had to not have certain violence in them, and other ones were like, no, we're going to follow this trend that everyone loves. So you saw a bunch of, like, the Dark Horse books, barbed wire, stuff like that coming out, that were a lot more violent than what most of us grew up on with Spider-Man and Batman and stuff. But also, like, I think Superman even made a comment in it. I'm trying to find the page. It was where only the weak succumb to brutality.
Oh, I remember him saying that.
Yeah, only the weak succumb to brutality. So it's like, he's also kind of like saying, you know, I have this code because, you know, this is not what a weak person would do. You don't just go to violence. You try to help people. And even if those people are crazy, you try to help them. So that was the one thing that he's tried to stick through, because he's Superman. And so it's just really interesting, because the new generation, they are very, you can, like, even reading it, you can tell that the new generation of superheroes are very misguided, and they're very, like, eager to punch instead of try to solve problems. So you really get that feeling that the older group were the ones that they went away, and they left all these kids there to figure it out, and the kids didn't figure it out with guidance.
I have to say, one thing I found interesting, I agree with what you're saying, Angela. My memory of this comic was that it was firmly in the camp of the old heroes. It was really downplaying the sort of mess that the younger heroes had created. And rereading it for the podcast, I realized that Wade seemed to be taking more of a middle road than I remembered, because while he is certainly, absolutely saying that, like, violent heroism is not the way to go, he also, the way I was reading it this time, he seems to be saying that, but the older generation, like, is out of touch. Like, they don't quite have it right either, because they come in and try to fix it, and they only make it worse. What I found interesting this time is that he seems to be kind of advocating for something new. That, yes, the sort of violent anti-hero approach isn't the way, but also the sort of maybe the old school goody two-shoes ways isn't quite right either. That just doesn't resonate anymore. So I found that kind of interesting, just as a commentary on just superhero comics in general.
I mean, truthfully, it's kind of a commentary on the world itself. Since a lot of times authors and artists try to mimic or at least make a moral of what's going on in the world today or back then in the 90s.
Now, did you guys like how this ended?
For me, the final chapter of this book is the best part of the comic, for me personally. It's so powerful. The scene, the confrontation between Shazam and Superman is, it's a really cool fight, incredibly well portrayed by Alex Ross. Also, again, talking about like comics history, kind of referencing the legal battle between those two characters, having that portrayed in a comic was cool. But then also just the Superman talking, like pleading with Shazam to fix the situation that he can't fix. He's like, I don't know what to do. And to me, that's so interesting. And when Superman admits that even he, Superman of all people, doesn't know what to do. And then the immediate fallout when the bomb goes off and you kind of get those wordless panels of Superman in despair and you get those red eyes. That is just, that panel is incredible. Followed by Norman's kind of talking Superman down. It's just that whole last chapter to me is just incredible.
Yeah, it was really good stuff.
I totally agree with you. Also, just the way that the comic panels are done, just like the very small little snippets of just everyone like looking up like, oh my gosh, something bad's gonna happen and everything else. So it's really cool because you don't really get that much emotion sometimes in the story. Some of it is left for you to like create in your head, even though there are panels and images and stuff. Just with the painted artwork, it really had a very powerful effect.
Yeah, I agree. And that's a really interesting point too, where it's kind of left up to you. And I think some of that is intentional because you are only seeing the story from Norman's perspective. And so you can kind of see things in the background. Like you can see that Black Canary has fallen. Or I think it's either Black Canary or their daughter has fallen in battle. And you can see Oliver kind of cradling her. And then in the aftermath of the bomb, you can see their skeletons. And that's such a, like, the story doesn't focus on that at all. It's just for you to notice as the reader. And that's something where you are inserting your emotion into that. Like for me, like that's awful. But it's so cool too, the detail that he puts in, that's something that the story's not talking about, but you can almost have this whole little mini story just kind of there, just kind of interpreting that yourself.
I also like how once the bomb went off, Superman kind of loses it. It takes Norman to talk some sense into him.
Talk sense to him and also Spectre, where he's like, if you let this happen, that's the true evil in this whole thing. Everybody up until this point has been acting out of what they thought was the right thing to do and acting out of fear, but you, the Spectre, have a chance to actually do something and you're not. Like, that's evil. So that was, again, just like I said, that whole last chapter to me is just really good stuff.
When we get to the 1 year later part of the story, I really enjoyed that too, where we have Clark and Diana and Bruce all getting together for a meal. I really enjoyed the ending there. And then going back to that, basically to that restaurant we started off with in the first place, the superhero restaurant. I really enjoyed that sequence and how they wrapped up the story there.
So one thing I wanted to ask you, Drew, since now that you've read this, going back to the Young Justice book that we read that incorporated the Kingdom Come universe, you see why I was so confused about the portrayal of that?
Yeah.
That sort of darker spin on those. And I was like, when was the last time the person that wrote this read Kingdom Come?
Also, can we really talk about how this book dated itself by having them asking for smoking or non-smoking section in the restaurant?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's not too many places that have, I can't think of any places that have a smoking section in the restaurant. It's pretty much not done anymore. Well, I do remember when restaurants used to have smoking and non-smoking, believe it or not.
I do as well, because you had to walk through the smoking to get to the non-smoking section.
Yeah, and I've never been a smoker, so the, and I've always had allergy sinus issues, and sometimes smoke can really bother me. Sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it does.
As someone with asthma, I feel you.
I really enjoyed reading this, and I'm glad we took the time to discuss this on the podcast. If anybody out there hasn't read this, of course, I don't know why you're listening to it before you read it. our discussion on it. You have to check this out. This is a really good comic, I think.
And if you have Amazon Prime and the Kindle app, you can read it for free.
Or if you have Comixology Unlimited, it's also free on there. All right, any last words about Kingdom Come before we wrap it up?
All I can say is, like, you echo what you guys are saying. It's a, if you have not read this comic, I highly recommend it. And then for people who have read it, I personally have had a lot of success as giving this to people who have not really read a lot of superhero comics before, and it being something that they get really intrigued by.
All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Angela?
Just check me out on Earth Station One podcast every week on A Geek Girl's Take, and thank you guys so much for having me again.
We enjoyed having you come back on and talk with us. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, I've got a couple different comics to recommend. One of them I mentioned earlier, talking about other books that Alex Ross has done. The other big DC one that he did was Justice, which is, it's basically like the Super Friends and the Legion of Doom, but with Alex Ross's artwork instead. It's really cool. It's a really good comic. The other one that I wanted to recommend is sort of a, it's a very brief part of the comic, but it's definitely a parody on both Kingdom Come and sort of just like the sort of self-serious comics that were coming out around then, like Justice and some of the other Alex Ross ones. So Plastic Man number 8 by Kyle Baker, which I know I've referenced his run before. You can also, I've realized, they've put it on the DC Universe app, but Plastic Man number 8 starts with a really hilarious parody of, like, if Plastic Man was in that sort of world.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about the Indiana Comic-Con, because I went to Indiana Comic-Con yesterday, had a great time, picked up some cool new posters, and I did make it to one panel while I was there. I went and saw John Barrowman. I learned the correct pronunciation of his name. Apparently, I've been saying it wrong the whole time, which is not surprising with me, huh? But I really enjoyed his panel. He is a great storyteller. He's almost like a comedian for geeks. And I have to say, he came out with an interesting outfit on. He's basically wearing a TARDIS dress with heels, and he was very sparkly. He's very flamboyant, and the stories he told us, he was telling us stories about basically from the night before. He told us about his adventure of going to Hooters restaurant for dinner and some other stories, and he did have some questions and answers. It was just a fun panel. If you ever get a chance to see one of his panels, I recommend going to it. All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we'll be talking Superman, Action Comics, Detective Comics, Dial H for Hero, Justice League, Justice League Dark, The Terrifics, Wonder Woman, Batman, Curse of the White Knight, and, of course, Titans Season 2 is coming back. So excited about that. A lot of stuff to talk about next week. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.